Mises HealthWise is sponsored by the Professional Supplement Center, which is an independently owned business that ships a full array of vitamins, supplements, and other natural products all over the world. They have an on-staff nurse. Once again, that's Professional Supplement Center, located at 5441 Palmer Crossing Circle in Sarasota. Their website is professionalsupplementcenter.com. That's professionalsupplementcenter.com. My guest today is Dr. Thomas Quinn from LECOM, the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. He's been on my show before, and he always provides fabulous insights into osteopathic medicine. Dr. Thomas Quinn, D-O-F-A-O-C-O-P-M, is a graduate of the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine and is board certified in occupational medicine and family practice. Dr. Quinn was a commissioned medical officer in the USA Navy, was in private practice for over 20 years. Dr. Quinn served as the National Medical Director for Humana Workers' Compensation and is currently a professor at the Bradenton branch of the Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. Dr. Quinn is the author of the book, The Feminine Touch, about women in osteopathic medicine. And in fact, that's going to be our topic today, because I thought it would be interesting, since the majority of people in this country who are caregivers and caretakers in their family units are generally women. So I thought it would be interesting to talk about women's role in osteopathic medicine. So welcome once again to one of my favorite guests, Dr. Quinn.
Hi, Niecy. How are you?
I'm doing well tonight, better since I have you as my guest.
Okay, great.
I know you've answered this before, but please, for the people who perhaps didn't hear it the first time around, what is the difference between a DO and an MD?
Okay, there are two major differences. The first is the philosophical approach to the practice of medicine. The osteopathic approach is to treat the whole person, treat the mind, the body, the spirit, and to take everything into consideration. Mm-hmm. The allopathic approach, and allopathic is the name for the modern MD, is to treat disease. Now, I'm not trying to imply that MDs do only treat disease. The modern MD does do preventive medicine, but this is an osteopathic concept that is ingrained into our medical students from the first day, that they are to treat the whole person as a holistic approach to medicine.
And not just the specific symptom or ailment that the patient may come in with.
That's correct. We take into consideration the entire person, their emotional status, their spiritual status, that anything that may be influencing their problem.
Excellent.
So now, that's just the first. Now, the second portion of why the difference between the MD and the DO is that the osteopathic physician learns a form of manipulative therapy, which is a form of treatment that the MDs do not do. At least most MDs. There's a few around who have taken
And that's spinal that. Manipulation.
That's spinal manipulation. So that's something that we do over and above what the MD schools teach.
So, again, a more holistic approach for my listeners. We're getting a whole-body approach from the osteopathic medicine, which is a whole-body approach versus an allopathic or disease or symptomatic approach from most, not all, MDs. Now, I think it's interesting to tell people what the origin of osteopathic medicine is, how it all began with the herbs.
Well, it started back in the mid-19th century. A physician who was himself an allopathic physician, his name was Andrew Taylor Still, and he was a medical officer in the Union Army during the American Civil War. And during the war, he became very dissatisfied with the state of medicine. And then after he was discharged from the military, he went back and established his civilian practice. And he was only in practice for a couple of months when an epidemic of meningitis came to the area.
Serious.
And three of his children died within a 48-hour period. The MDs did everything they could, but they were unable to help his children. And then month later, he had a fourth child die of pneumonia. And once again, the MDs were not able to save the child.
Horrible.
So this doctor who had was already dissatisfied with the state of medical practice had four children die within 1 month, and the MDs were not able to help him. So he went into research looking for a new method of treating the patients, and this is how we developed osteopathic medicine.
And initially it involved herbal medicines as well, did it not?
Originally, osteopathic medicine involved all medications, including prescription medications. However, in the beginning, this was an era that they called the era of heroic medicine, where arsenic and mercury and narcotics and alcohol were the primary treatments. And so
we now call substance abuse.
Oh, absolutely.
That's part, yeah.
And so Dr. Still rejected these unproven but extremely toxic medications. Now, he did accept the medications with less side effects and with proven efficacy. So osteopathic medicine has always used medicine, but they have been very judicious with its use, and they weigh the benefits versus the risks.
Gotcha. We talked about Dr. Stills, and before I get into him a little further, I want to ask, who was the first woman to get a medical, an osteopathic degree or a medical degree, and what year was that?
Okay. The woman, her name was Elizabeth Blackwell. And the degree, she did get an MD degree. It was an allopathic degree.
Uh-huh.
And she graduated from the Geneva School of Medicine in New York. Now, there's a very interesting story
about
Elizabeth. That was
in 1849, right?
Well, she entered the school in 1847 and graduated in 1849.
So only 2 years to graduate with a medical degree back then.
Yes. In fact, that was one of the better medical schools. This is the era where probably 75% of the physicians in the United States, of course, they were all male physicians, 75% of the physicians had never seen the inside of a medical school. There were one-year medical schools, and only the better schools were two-year medical schools.
Wow. And in essence, in order for someone to get into medicine previous to this, essentially they did an apprenticeship with another doctor. Is that correct?
That's how majority of physicians were getting their licenses. They'd have an apprenticeship. It could be over their father and uncle. And sometimes they would pay a local physician to serve an apprenticeship with him. And then they'd serve the apprenticeship could be any year, anywhere from 1 to 2 years. And when that physician felt that the apprentice was ready to practice medicine, he would write him a little piece of paper saying that he was ready to practice medicine, sign the paper, and that was the new doctor's license to practice medicine.
Lovely. I'd certainly like to walk into my doctor's office and see that on the wall. That'd be very inspirational.
Yes, well, that was a long time ago.
Oh, thank heavens. Okay, so what was the initial objection? Feminists, you're going to love this one. What was the initial objection to women practicing medicine? Give us some of the examples.
There were multiple objections to it. A lot of the, some of the physicians felt that affect the woman's femininity. It would get them sexually aroused. They felt that sometimes the female brain was not large enough to absorb the material needed to practice medicine.
I love this.
They also felt that the feminine brain was too soft and could not absorb the material necessary. And there were multiple other cultural reasons why they just absolutely would not want women, not only in medicine, but in any of the sciences.
Astonishing. Now, what was the first college, medical college, to accept a woman? And please tell us the story behind it.
Okay. It was the Geneva School of Medicine. It was an MD school, allopathic school. And the year was 1847. And Elizabeth Blackwell applied to the school. And there had never been a woman accepted into any medical school in the United States, so the administration put it to a vote of the students. And when the students got
this, which were all male, of course.
They were all male. And when the students got this, they thought the administration was playing a joke on them. So therefore, they accepted her
They thought it was a prank.
They thought was a prank, and then later on, when they found out that it was not a prank, they wanted to withdraw, but it was too late. She had already been accepted. So consequently, she became the very first female to get a medical degree in the United States. And by the way, the Geneva School never again accepted any other female into that school.
Probably because she blew all the male students away. No, that's
absolutely
just a side
note. She was one of the very top ones in the class.
I bet she was. And that medical college, the first one in Pennsylvania, what was the first medical college in Pennsylvania?
The very first medical college in the United States was the College of Philadelphia, which we now know today as the University of Pennsylvania College of Medicine. And this was founded in 1873, and they started the all-male tradition of accepting only males into the schools, and all of the other schools followed the same as the years went on.
So what was the proportion of men versus women in the latter 1800s?
Okay.
Or early 1900s?
Well, in the later part, let's go back to 1892, because that's the year the first osteopathic college was founded.
Okay.
But at the time they founded the first osteopathic college, there were 105 MD colleges. Now, most of them were allopathic, but there were some homeopathic and eclectic colleges, which are no longer in existence. But anyway, there were 105 schools. Of those 105 schools, five were all female schools that would accept no males. And then of the hundreds, there were 67 that would accept only males. And there were 33 that would accept only, predominantly male students, but they would accept the token now and again. Now, that did not even mean that they had a female in the school at that time. All it meant, at any time they had ever accepted a female, they were put into that category. So then in 1892 was the year when the Andrew Taylor still founded the first osteopathic medical school, and he made this the first true co-ed school where males and females could go to the school at the same time, and the admission requirements were equal, and everything else was equal.
Financially, right? Didn't he charge men more than the women?
Yes. Right in the very beginning, he charged men. And if there's any medical students listening at this, you'll blow your mind. Medical school was $500 a year
for men,
but only $200 a year for females.
So Dr. Stills really was trying to encourage women to enter medical school.
We believe that's why. We have no real explanation why he charged less for women, other than the fact that he was trying to encourage females to go to a school.
Approximately how many women do you think there are in osteopathic medicine today, in 2013?
Right now, about 35% of all practicing osteopathic physicians are female. However, if you go into the osteopathic medical schools, it's very, very close to 50-50.
Excellent. So more and more women are going into medicine.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, the allopathic schools are just about the same. They're right now, both the MD and the DO schools are, it might be 49, 51, it varies from year to year. There were a couple years where the females actually more than the males, but it's very, very close to 50-50 split right now.
Okay. Who developed the term osteopathic and why?
The word osteopathic was founded by Andrew Taylor Still, the founder of the profession, and osteo meaning bones and pathos meaning disease. And he did not mean that the osteopathic physicians treated only diseases of the bone, but he meant this is that the difference of what we do over and above the MDs, because back in the 1800s, if you went to a MD school, other than amputations and maybe enlancing of boils and things of that nature, setting of fractures, very, very little was was done with the musculoskeletal system. Back in that era, the musculoskeletal system was basically considered as a box to carry your organs around in.
Really?
And they really gave little or no credence to the musculoskeletal system until the osteopathic profession came around.
Were men and women treated differently in medical school in the 1800s?
Oh, absolutely.
So the few women that got into medical school initially
usually had a rough road to hoe. They had a lot of prejudice against them, not only from their fellow students, but from the professors also. So it was a very difficult road for the women trying to get into medicine in the early years. Let's take Elizabeth Blackwell to start to talk with. Even after she graduated from medical school, there was no hospital in the entire United States that would take her in for clinical training.
Good
so
boy.
She had to go back to England, which is where she came from originally, to get some clinical training. And then she returned to the United States again, and she tried to set up practice, and nobody would rent her an office.
That blows my mind, that no one would rent a woman an office in the late 1800s.
They did not want the stigma of being a landlord of a female physician, because they really considered that a stigma. And the only way she'd get around that is she purchased her own building, and then she was able to establish a clinic.
Kudos to Elizabeth Blackwell.
Oh, she is really one of the true pioneers in medicine and almost any of the sciences in the United States.
I think that's a fascinating story. Fascinating story. Would you say that it's safe to agree that osteopathic medicine really paved the way for women in all fields of medicine?
Absolutely. They were the very first one that truly accepted women on an equal basis. And, of course, once you got into medicine, then you could go into any field that you want to once you broke that barrier and got your degree. An interesting story is about the second school in the United States to become co-ed, and that was
Johns Hopkins
University in Baltimore. And they were scheduled to be open in 1893, the year after the osteopathic school. Now, Johns Hopkins University was opened before that, but the medical school opened in 1893. And they were scheduled to open as an all-male medical school. Yeah. And so right before they opened, a group of very prominent, very rich Baltimore women got together, and they offered Johns Hopkins a stipend or a grant of $500,000.
$500,000.
$500,000 in 1893 was big, big bucks.
Yeah.
So Johns Hopkins then accepted the grant and started to accept women into their school. And you can go right on their website. They'll tell you this identical story right on their own website about how the women got together and offered them the money to accept women into their school.
And so that's how Johns Hopkins finally started accepting women into med school, was because they got a $500,000 grant from some wealthy women in Baltimore. Amazing. Is it true that way back when, before the term allopathic was in use, that people referred to MDs as regular physicians and everyone else as irregular physicians?
Yes. This started back when the homeopathic physicians, which was the mid-1700s, started to come about, and the existing MDs referred to themselves as the regular physicians and the homeopaths as irregular. And then as the additional, the eclectic physicians, when they came along, and the osteopathic physicians, then they referred to them as irregular physicians.
No prejudice there.
No prejudice whatsoever. Another interesting story listeners may be interested in is the very opening of the very first all-female school. And that was the Female Medical College of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. was opened in 1850. And what happened was that a homeopathic college by the name Hahnemann Medical College opened in a building on Arch Street in Philadelphia.
Okay.
2 years later, they moved out to go into a bigger building, and a group of women went in and they took over the homeopathic school, and they opened the first female school, and that was in 1850.
Go, ladies, go.
That was the very first one. They closed for a short time during the American Civil War, but then reopened after the Civil War. And what's so very interesting is that by 113 years later, in 1969, they were still the only female college in the world. So they started as the very first female college, and by this time they were known as the Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania.
Wow.
In 1969, they started to accept males and became the Medical College of Pennsylvania. And then a few years later, they merged with that homeopathic college that had now become an allopathic college that had started in the same building with them a hundred and many years before that. So they started together, they ended up merging together, and right now that is Drexel University College of Medicine. A few years ago, Drexel bought up the Women's and the Homeopathic College.
Wow. That's irony for you.
Yes.
Interesting. What is your prediction about the proportion of men versus women practicing medicine in the future?
I am a firm believer. I think in the future we're going to see a gradual increase in the number of women who go into medical school. And I think in the long run, going down the road a while, we are going to see women become the dominant force within medicine.
And why do you feel that's the case?
Because I feel that women are the natural healers. If you look back historically, even going back to prehistoric times, the women have always been the nurturers. They have taken care of the children. They have taken care of the ill. And they have just done this through the millennium. And I think it's just natural that eventually we're going to get back to that again.
Interesting. Also, if we think about the majority of herbalists throughout the course of history and the people who kept track of the natural indigenous plants and what they could be used for to treat people medicinally, the majority of those were also women, were they not?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Probably, I mean, they were, 95% of those were female, yes.
Fascinating. Well, this has been a very interesting show, I think, to follow the course of women in medicine and what they had to go through to be allowed to practice medicine in this country. And I think your prediction is also right on the money for my 2 cents.
And right now, women are going into just about every field of medicine. There are still a couple of good old boys, the surgeons, and so the women are still going to some of the surgical fields, are still being resistant to women. But
they're making headway.
Oh, they're making very strong headways. And just by the pure numbers of women going into medicine, they are making very strong headways in their own.
Well, thank you, Dr. Quinn. That's about all we have time for today. The show sped by. If you'd like more information about the history of osteopathic medicine, Dr. Thomas Quinn's book is called The Feminine Touch, very appropriately, I might add, The Feminine Touch, Women in Osteopathic Medicine. And if you want to know more about osteopathic medicine in general, of course, you can always go onto LECOM's website. That's LECOM, LECOM.org. I'm Niecy Carbone, encouraging you to tell your friends about Niecy's HealthWise. In the meantime, here's to your health.